Okay, I think we're ready to get started. I am Courtney Lytle. I'm going to be talking to you today for the next hour or so about copyright law. I apologize for my accoutrements here. I have had some surgery, actually on both feet, which makes limping challenging. Normally, I pace back and forth madly. I will still probably do that. If I sit behind the podium like a normal person, I mumble, and I'm very boring. So I'm going to be out here, and I will variously walk back and forth and realize that hurts really a lot, and I'll go back to sitting or kneeling on my little friend here. So, little bit about me. I have been an attorney at a big firm. I went to school here at Emory locally. I worked for a couple different big firms, decided that that really was not the way I wanted to spend my life, and I went, you want me to keep talking so you can balance that out? Okay. Went up north, taught at Temple University for a while, have an LLM in law teaching even, and I'm currently kind of splitting my time between a little bit of practice on my own. I'm kind of retiring out of that, and I teach as an adjunct at Emory University. I teach copyright, I teach some IP classes, I teach a negotiation class. I've taught all kinds of stuff. Today, I'm teaching copyright to you guys. Since you're not law students, I don't have to give you an exam on it. I don't have to give you really boring reading assignments, but the reality is teaching copyright is actually kind of fun. Most stuff we do in law school, it's dry. You have to be a total like law dork like me to enjoy it. I mean, I thought antitrust was really sexy. I loved the UCC. I'm not quite right. But copyright is fun. When I teach copyright, we're talking about movies. We're talking about art. Usually we're talking about movies. These are law students. They don't do art. And when I come here, obviously we'll talk about things, hopefully, that are more on the level of what you guys are interested in. But we're going to start, if you don't mind. I'm going to give you an overview of what copyright law is, a little bit of what it isn't, what you need to know about it in general. Once I'm done with that, there will be time for questions, although I do need to ask Scott, are we 50 minutes or an hour and a half? We're an hour?
Yeah.
Okay. That would be something useful to know if I'm going to leave time for questions, how much time I have. So, without further ado, we're going to start into what is copyright law. There are three basic parts of intellectual property. Copyright is one of them. You have patents, you have trademarks, and you have copyright. Patents are the stuff for the really smart folks. And in fact, if you ever need to register a patent, here is your piece of free legal advice. Do not hire anyone who has not passed the patent bar. There are some patent agents who are allowed to work with your stuff. You don't hire them. Hire an actual member of the patent bar. It is, that last I heard, the only part of law where you have to have passed a separate exam to hold yourself out as a patent lawyer. I cannot appear before the patent courts because I am not a patent lawyer. You have to have like hard science background. You take a separate exam and it involves, like I said, science, which is a deal breaker for most lawyers. The general rule for law students is if we could do math or science, we would be in med school. And if you tell that to a room of lawyers, they really just die because it's true. There is a small subset, though, that can do science and words, and they're what we call patent lawyers, and they're different than the rest of us. If you have a patent, go to one of them. A patent is going to be a machine, an invention, the sciencey things. Unfortunately, these days, it is also sometimes stupid software and business methods. A lot of people were hoping that those things would be washed out by the Supreme Court a couple years ago. It didn't happen. They're still with us. The idea of alphabetizing your files, someone probably owns that. That gets us into patent trolls, that's a different panel. But if it is an invention, if it is, discoveries aren't patentable, although sometimes they patent them anyway. But a machine, a process, vaccine, something like that, those are all patents. The protection you get for a patent is very broad. No one else can use your process. If I discover the vaccine for the common cold, I would have a much fancier stroller. But if I discover the vaccine to the common cold, I can patent that, and then no one else can use it. Even if someone else in their lab discovers how to do that same thing, okay? Even if someone else, without even knowing I exist, discovered the way to a similar way to prevent the cold, they would not be allowed to use it. I could keep them from using it because it's too much like mine. So my patent covers my technology even if no one knew I had figured it out first. As long as I filed it with patent office and I have my patent, I own it. And I can keep you from doing it even if you're just doing it by yourself in your basement, not copying me, not knowing about me, and not telling anyone. I can still come in and stop you from doing it. And if I'm a litigator, I can go get hired by a patent troll and I can cause no end of trouble for all sorts of entrepreneurs or legitimate businessmen. Again, different panel. Those are your patents. If you do have a patent, there's no way you can file it yourself. LegalZoom notwithstanding, if it's valuable enough to try to patent it, get a real patent lawyer. Thus ends the patent segment of our program. The next one is trademark. Trademark is something that that is fairly easy to be as a lawyer. Copyright and trademark, most IP lawyers can do both. Trademarks are things that y'all are familiar with. I'm looking around for something. Oh, sweetie, come here. Can. Why, look, a trademark. Now, this is the evil trademark that they can't always sell in Atlanta. Traditionally, we said things like the red swoosh, but we seem to have gotten special dispensation. So this is a Pepsi product. Shh. But I can look at this, and I know who made it. I know it's a Pepsi product. I know it's Mountain Dew. I know what it's going to taste like when I drink it. I know what's in this because of the label. Trademark is, at its heart, a Consumer Protection Act. I know when I buy something with this label what it is and where it comes from. If I don't want to get roughed up by the cops when I cross the street, I'll be carrying a red can with a white swoosh instead. Because we're in Atlanta, you know, you got to be careful. So the white swoosh on a red can, you know what's in the can. And if I'm carrying it, you know, there's probably some bourbon poured in it too, but you know what was originally in the can. Trademarks identify the source of the product or goods. So if you see, I mean, around here there's a plumber that has a little pink ribbon. We all know that's that one plumber. There's a guy who advertises his roofing service, the dog going roof, roof. Findlay, I think is the name of the guy. Regardless, I know their ad better than their thing. But it tells you where that good or service is coming from. That's your trademark. If you want to trademark the name of your company or your logo or your slogan or something like that, you can. The trademark process, the trademark process is actually not that difficult. It's all done online now. If you've never done it before, it'll make your ears bleed. You can work your way through it. You can call the trademark office. They will help you with some of it. They will not give you legal advice. Don't ask them legal questions. If you ask them a question about how to fill out the forms, they'll answer them pretty well. If you get a stupid answer, just like any other one, say, gee, thanks, hang up, call back, get someone else, get a better answer. Works with the IRS, works with them. Y'all should know that one by now. If you get someone who's really stupid, hang up, call back, get someone else. You know, it'll be Bob from Indiana again, but it'll still be helpful. So you need to make sure that when you're thinking about a trademark, you know, the way you keep your trademark active after you file it is to use it. Coca-Cola will own Coca-Cola until the end of time, as long as they still use it. Patents last 20 years, give or take a few clever lawyers. Copyrights have their own term, which we'll get to. Both copyrights and patents end at a certain point. Trademarks go on forever and ever, amen, so long as you continue to use them. But you can't protect your writing. You can't protect your art. You can't protect your dance with a trademark. That's your brand name. It's your logo. Quick, trip this guy as he comes forward.
But you could protect, say, like a pen name. If I want to go by a specific name for all my art and put it on all my art and don't want anyone to use that name because I don't know clever witty, I can use a trademark for that?
You can trademark the source, yes. So you can, and the trademark filings, 325-ish, 350, what are they at now?
350? 425.
425, they've gone up again. Yeah. 425 to file your trademark. Your patent read to try to file it after you hire a patent lawyer, we're talking tens of thousands. So the trademark is not free, but it's reasonable, so you wait for something that really matters before you try to trademark it. Yes?
Is that a one-time fee or a yearly fee?
It's a one-time fee to register, and then you have to renew it 5 years out, and there's a filing fee for that too, of course. And now, what your flat fee is going to be can be increased depending on how many classes you file in, how many types of things you're doing. If you want to protect your name, the coolest store ever is the name of my vendor booth, and I want to sell t-shirts and burritos, I'm going to have to register it in two different classes, so I'm going to pay pretty much twice as much. So I can't just say I'm the coolest store ever, and I sell everything from pets to cars and all the stuff in between. I have to register in individual classes, so my $400 filing fee will start multiplying up. It's the government. They like that. So those are your basic trademarks. We're not talking about that today either, but I kind of have to set those aside so that we don't end up wanting to talk about our names and those sorts of things. Copyright is today's topic. Copyright is sort of the rest of it. It's the stuff that's not an invention. It's not a process. It's not going to tell you how to do stuff. In fact, with copyright, you got to think about arts and squishy things and pretty things, because if there's any actual substance to your work, like historical facts, scientific facts, any facts, you don't own those facts. If I want to read someone else's history book, I often do. So having read someone else's history book, if I now know things because of that history book, I can use those very freely. If I reword it sufficiently, I can write it in my own book without having to get their permission to use it. They don't own the facts in their book. Even if after years and years of dedicated and detailed and painstaking and, you know, probably afternoon at the pubs sort of research in England, I really have found the tomb of Arthur. Well, okay, I spent a lot of work figuring that out and, you know, a lot of pints. But I figured this out. I have perfect proof, bulletproof. I opened it. The angels sang. The sword popped out. I know this is it. I can write that in my book. And you know what? Someone else could write all of that exact same information in a book, and as long as they didn't use my words, they can use my facts and steal them from me, basically, and I can't stop them. Because all that copyright protects is my expression. So that's, I'm going to see if I can convince myself to be like a real teacher and write on the board. So my expression is going to be protected. My facts are not. Another thing that's not going to be protected is my idea. So if I have this great idea, and I've done a lot of work for some pro bono groups here in town, and I tend to get these artists or these playwrights or these authors coming up saying, I've got this great idea, and I need to protect it. I'm like, okay, you know the best way to protect that idea? Don't tell anyone. If you write it down, what you've written down is protected. If you have this great concept, you really can't keep anyone from using it because copyright doesn't protect that. Even if you do write it down, what's protected is how you wrote it down. My book will be protected, and where my idea stops and my expression starts, well, okay, I can give you the obvious examples, and that's what I like to do because it's an easy question, so I do those. Okay, boy meets girl, boy falls in love with girl, things go badly. We've all read these books. Shakespeare wrote one or two of them. And so we know that basic plot line. I can't own that plot line. Just because Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet, he would not be able to stop me from writing a similar boy meets girl, things go badly, everyone dies book. Now, at some point between that basic plot synopsis and, you know, Capulets and bitings of thumbs and friars and poison and heaving breasts on balconies and all of those things. That's Zeffirelli, but you know. Somewhere in there, it's become protected. Somewhere along that line from basic plot to how he really wrote it out. Somewhere in there, he starts owning it. I mean, he's dead. He doesn't own it anymore. But if I were that good a playwright, somewhere in there, I would get to own it. And some of it has to do with the details you fill out. If you have characters in your books who are really original, like, you know, there was a couple famous cases that had like an Irish cop, a Jewish banker, you know, things like a stupid blonde. You know, you can put those characters in there all you want. You can't keep someone else from using them. Now, if you tweak out a very detailed and intricate character, then you can own that character. No one else can steal it if you've gotten the details specific enough that you've created something real. And that people, when they take it, are really taking your character, not the idea of a young boy who doesn't know who his real parents are, who discovers he has magic. Okay, maybe y'all can think of a couple things that would follow that plot line. In fact, I use this example when I teach because one person's infringement is another person's, oh, shut up, you're dumb. My mother is not a big sci-fi fantasy fan. She saw Star Wars in the theater with me, I'm that old, and having seen Star Wars thought, oh, well, this is kind of like a Western with spaceships. Well, yeah, she's right. Okay, so we saw Star Wars, that was great. She didn't see the others, she was done. I think the next exposure she had to science fiction or fantasy was when she was at my house and had hurt her leg, ironically, and was looking for something to read and picked Harry Potter up off my bookshelf and read it. And about partway through said, well, this is just a knockoff of Star Wars. Well, it's the only two things she'd ever read in the genre. And I kind of went, what? But then you stop and think, well, let's see, young boy, raised by people, not his parents, uncles even, okay. Raised by people, not his parents, discovers over time he has these weird powers, learns to use them, has to fight against the big evil guy whose name starts with a V in most cases, by the way. Mommy became dead. They both start with a V, and they look alike. I'm like, well, they're kind of wearing a black cape. Okay. But so to her, this was clearly infringing. She thought that, you know, Lucas should sue J.K. Rowling because clearly she's knocking off his work. Well, what she didn't understand was the other 5,000 pieces that have been written with pretty much the same plot. You know, young boy unsure of parents, discovers he's the king, discovers he's a wizard, discovers he's a whatever. I'm still looking forward to reading a good fantasy book where his parents had not been killed mysteriously decades earlier. But it's, we know that plot line. We've all read hundreds of that plot line. My mom had read two. Actually, she saw one and read one. To her, it was obvious copyright infringement. Well, no, not really. Because if you look at Star Wars and Harry Potter, okay, I can distill it down to actually a similar plot. And he has to, before his training is complete, he has to go battle the big bad dude. Wow, okay. There's no Yoda in Harry Potter. There are no wizard snacks in Star Wars. But, okay, it still, if you distill it down far enough, is kind of the same idea at that level. At the level of expression, where both Lucas and Rowling shared it with us, those are not going to be a copyright infringement issue. So that's kind of your spectrum, along there somewhere. Oh, so like I said, at a very basic idea level, Mom would have been right. I won't ever admit that to her. But Mom would have been right. But ideas, like your facts, are not covered by copyright. Your expression of your idea is. Whether you express that idea in a song, whether you express that idea in art, whether you express that idea in literature, what you write, what you draw, that's what's copyrighted. Now, y'all are recording me, right? My speech today is covered by the copyright law. Before they started recording these, what my speeches were not. Now, were I to prepare extensive notes that covered everything I was going to say, rather than my notes to remind me not to forget anything basic, my notes would be protected because I have written it down. I have fixed my ideas in a tangible expression. Look, tangible expression. The recording they're making of me is sufficiently tangible, so my words actually are going to be covered by copyright now. That's kind of cool because they're being recorded. If they weren't being recorded, poof, they're gone. They're not fixed in tangible medium. They are not covered by copyright. So how you express your idea, that's what's covered. Now, copyright covers all of the artistic things. It's going to be your literature. It's going to be your choreographies. It can be stage plays, it can be sculptures, it can be all these sorts of things, it can be books. I usually talk about books because that's kind of the easiest way to talk about copyright, but it covers all of the other things as well. Copyright, to get your copyright, to make your copyright exist, all you have to do is write it down. Fix it in a tangible medium. They're recording it, this is covered by federal copyright law. The federal copyright laws protect this speech. I don't have to file it. I am protected. However, if it's something I really care about, if this is my big novel that I've been working on, if this is my beautiful work of photography, and oh, by the way, I'm a photographer for a living, I'm going to go ahead and file it with the Copyright Office because I get greater rights and I need to do that if I'm going to bring a real major lawsuit anyway. Yeah? If you don't file, I mean, basically it's making your claim not as strong and you have fewer remedies at federal court. Yeah?
What if you don't own the recording?
Well, I was going to say that Scott and I can arm wrestle over which one of us would actually own this, whether I've given my works to EFF or whether I still own them. I'm thinking since the commercial value of this is less than it took to buy that bottle of Mountain Dew, that we're not going to really break our friendship over the rights in my speech. Depends on what I signed, or what they signed, or what we agreed on. Whether I'm doing this as a work made for hire, sort of, yeah. We'll get to work made for hire, but sometimes you own it, sometimes your employer owns it. So, but anyway, to file your copyright is an easy thing. You guys certainly could do this without a lawyer. Trademark, you can, your ears will bleed. If it's something you really care about, you probably ought to hire a lawyer to help you through it at least the first time. Your claim will be better if you lose a lawyer, if you use a lawyer. Patents, don't even think about it without a lawyer. Copyright, you can do it yourself. It's really easy. There's a form, it's copyright.gov. Run through the Library of Congress. You go, you fill out the online form. Either you attach a copy of your work if it's digital, or you print it. They give you a little thing, you hit a button, it prints out a label for you to send the requisite two copies to them. Easy. $35 and you're done. If it's something you care about, do that. If it's the book you want to publish, go ahead and file it. If it's work that you're really proud of, go ahead and file it. But your copyright exists even if you didn't file it, and that's important. And that's not true of the others. In trademark, you may have some common law rights to the name if you've been using it without filing it. You have no federal rights just from use. You've got to file. Patent, you got to file. Copyright, you should file to protect your rights better, but you own the copyright to it even if you don't file. Filing's easy. Do it if you care about the work. Yeah.
I do it in a podcast, and I do it for free, and I do it on a network called alldigitalradio.com that this guy Daryl Roberts runs. If I own the copyright of my content, right, but he owns the network, I can download, I've been doing it a year, so I could download the 30 or 40 that I've done, and do I have to file a separate copyright for each one?
You could file them as a compilation.
As a compilation. Yeah, that's what
I should check, though. When you started working for him, did you sign anything?
Nope. Okay. It's all verbal. And it was just, I wanted to take Fridays off. Will you do a show for an hour so I can screw off?
Yeah. You can file them all together is the easy answer. Okay, so filing is easy. It gives you a longer term than it used to be.
Sorry, just going back to that sort of spectrum between ideas and expression. Let's say, just for the sake of argument, that Romeo and Juliet were still under copyright.
Okay.
Would West Side Story be a copyright violation?
Depends on the lawyers. The basic storyline's there. The expression of it's very different. Obviously, West Side Story is a knockoff on Romeo and Juliet. Can you even call it a knockoff? Because, again, if you go back to the idea of boy meets girl, things go badly. I don't think that there would ever be a way that anyone could own that. Well, with West Side Story and Romeo and Juliet, you sort of do have a little more. You've gone further up that way because you have the warring families. We're not in Italy anymore, so it looks very different. Some of the details are very different, but you have the warring families, you have the clandestine meetings, you have the confusion, you have the death, it's not a death, and the suicide, and then the next, So you're closer. Would it be, honestly, at that point, it is going to depend in large part on your lawyers and your judge. And unfortunately, with law, that's a lot of it. I would tend to think no, but I could see a smart litigator convincing a judge otherwise. What you're going to end up doing is doing just a point-by-point analysis of plot, of character, how much was taken, how much was not. It costs a lot. That's the biggest thing, and when we get into fair use, you're going to hear this from me a lot. It doesn't matter who wins at court. Unless you guys are really, really famous authors, which you could be, I wouldn't necessarily recognize you. Hell, you could be famous actors, and I wouldn't recognize you. But unless you're really famous and really rich, you cannot afford a copyright lawsuit. Your publisher probably can. You can't. Your publisher may bring one on your behalf if you are a successful artist or a successful author, but you can't afford it on your own. Even just an okay lawyer is going to start at $400 an hour. Start doing some math in your head, and you will see that you, unless you guys are really rich, which, come talk to me afterwards, we need to meet, that you cannot afford a trial. So the goal is to avoid them. For normal humans, the goal is to avoid the trial, not to win the trial. Sorry to the litigators who make their living winning trials. But I'm not a litigator. A couple people will have some specific trial sort of questions. I don't know the answers to this. I'm a transactional lawyer. I write license agreements. I negotiate deals. I don't do courtroom stuff. So some of those questions I just won't know the answer to that are specific trial things. But with that one, again, you'll know when the judge tells you. And the judge will tell you an awful lot of money down the road. So before you think about, but I've got this great claim, think about how much do you really think you can afford to bring that claim. And that's one of the hardcore realities of intellectual property law. How much justice can you afford? So we have gone through who owns it. We have gone through the extended coverage and copyright. See, I have my notes for a reason. Is it something around this topic? We're going to have questions at the end. I don't want to get too far off. Okay. We talked about your coverage. I said there was a term. I didn't even tell you what it was. Life plus 70. After you die, your trademark or your copyright belongs to your heirs for 70 years. So life of the author plus 70. It did not used to be this way. It used to be two distinct terms, and you had to renew to get the second term. and you ended up with about 56 years total of coverage. So since that happened, we have extended it significantly. We've gone from a 25 or 27 years after you file, and then you renew for an additional 27-year term, or you would get a shorter and you had to renew in the middle. We got rid of all that in 1976. Anything done from 76 on, it's life of the author plus 70. Anything from before 76, then you have to go back and start digging around to try to figure out, did they renew? If they renewed, did it extend up until 76? Because then it was extended a few extra times, and you ended up with your second term being much longer. Before 76, you've got some sleuth work to figure out how long the copyright lasts. Anything since 76, life of the author plus 70. If you are hiring, if you're doing it under pen name, there's slightly other rules. If your corporation owns it, there's slightly different rules. But your basic rule to take away is life plus 70. So it's a long term. There was some controversy when they extended it. People tended to think that that was just too long. And if you are, it's going to depend whether you think life plus 70 is too long. Basically, you'll think it's too long if you want to be using other people's stuff, then you think that's too long. If you own stuff and you want to protect it, you think that maybe that's not quite long enough. So there's your controversy. But life plus 70, filing is easy. Now, I told you about patent coverage, where you could keep someone else from using your patented discovery invention, even if they didn't even know about you. Copyright is different. Just think of the word, copyright. If someone independently creates yours, if I lived on a desert island for the last 30 years and nevertheless wrote this charming book about wizards and a school called Hogwarts, and it was word for word Harry Potter, but I could prove I had not been in touch with anyone, I created this by myself, they couldn't stop me from publishing it. It would be mine. If I independently created it, it's mine. So if someone is copying your work, you kind of have to be able to prove that they copied it, that they didn't make it themselves. And which sometimes is easy, sometimes is not. But so independent creation is not covered by copyright, it is covered by patent. You kind of get what you pay for there, I suppose. With copyright, so you don't own the substance, you own the expression, and you can't keep someone from doing it on their own and just really much like yours. That being said, you do have the right to derivative works. For instance, if you walk through the dealer's room, you will probably see some drawings of some people from books or movies. I haven't been there this year, but usually there's a few drawings of characters from books and movies. Usually they're not in the expensive dealer's rooms because those would be copyright infringement. Someone owns that image, someone owns that character, and you can't. So the fan fiction that some of y'all like to write, yes, you're infringing copyright. Fan fiction is infringing the copyright of the rights holder to whatever the movie or whatever. If you're writing about Spock and Kirk meeting somewhere in a bar, you are infringing the copyright of Roddenberry's estate or Paramount, whoever owns it. Universal, I don't even know who owns it these days. But someone owns it, it ain't you, and you're infringing that copyright. A lot of smart content owners allow fan fiction because, hello, who's writing them? Fans. What do fans do? They buy stuff that's put out under that same merchandising title. So if you're crazy enough about Trek to go write that book or write that little fan fiction piece, chances are you're going to go to the next movie if you didn't like the last two. Chances are you're still going to buy the uniforms. Chances are you've got some books at home that you've bought. So they don't want to piss you off if they're smart. They're not always smart. The ones who are smart realize that it's better to let fan fiction exist because it keeps the fans excited, it keeps the fans engaged, and it keeps the fans spending money on the authorized merchandise. Aha. Don't try to sell your fan fiction. That will get their attention. When we talk about what you're allowed to use, and this is the other term that I asked for the board, just so I could write this up here. Y'all have heard this. Fair use. Fair use, like, well, yeah, but I'm allowed to use this because I'm just critiquing it, because I'm doing this. Usually when I have people who are really determined that they can use fair use, that they can say, oh, but it's fair use because I need to use this. It's usually fair use because they really want to use someone else's stuff. I get a little dogmatic on this. I tend to say, quit whining, make up your own shit. But fair use is something that you will never know if a use is fair until the judge tells you. First thing about fair use that none of y'all knew is that fair use is not something that you can just say, I'm using this and it's a fair use. Fair use is a defense to a claim of infringement. You don't even get to talk about fair use until someone's already sued you for infringement. Now, go back to that $400 an hour, and that's not for a really good lawyer yet. And let's talk about how far into that lawsuit you want to go. So, in a perfect world, you guys, I'm not going to go through the four elements of fair use, but I will say that one of them, and not the only one, is whether your use is commercial. So, if you're selling your fan fiction, it's not that that means it's definitely not a fair use. Commercial uses can still be fair use. But, yeah, you better have made millions off of that. Because if you lose the case, you'll have to give it all those profits back anyway. You'll need those millions to pay your lawyer. So just because you're not selling it doesn't mean it's not infringement. Just because you do sell it doesn't mean it's not fair use. But, you know, the difference is whether Paramount gives a damn. If you're publishing it out there and you drew some pictures and you're a huge fan, chances are Paramount's not going to care. But when you start selling it, suddenly they care. Because now you're taking fan dollars that might have been spent on their stuff. Then they care. J.K. Rowling, my other big, I use her a lot because everyone knows this and it's an easy work to talk about. She let kids have fan pages up and all kinds of stuff. Y'all know the 12-year-old that she sued, though, right? Who knows the case?
It was like the Harry Potter Encyclopedia, which was, but she took issue with it when they started trying to sell it as a book.
He had a brilliantly done encyclopedia of the entire Harry Potter universe. It was well done, it was accurate, it was flattering, and she was fine with it until he really started publishing it. And then suddenly she wasn't fine. Actually, I think as soon as that whole work was up, she started having an issue, and then he put it up and started selling it quickly. With her, it wasn't even so much that he was selling it, because I think for a while it was free. Her issue with him was, wait, that's something I might want to do. Yep. Paramount's not going to write that little piece about Kirk and Spock hooking up in the bar. But J.K. Rowling might well, or Scholastic might one day, want to publish the Harry Potter Encyclopedia, because let's be real, she's done with the 7 books, kids will keep buying stuff. So then you start doing the encyclopedias, the compendiums, the, you know, whatever you can come up with to keep people buying stuff from you. Well, encyclopedia is an easy one that someone might want to buy. So she's like, okay, you guys, that's great, that one, no. And literally, they sued a 12-year-old kid. He lost, because it was obviously infringement. All of the other kids would have lost, too, if they'd been sued. Because it was obviously infringement, but no one cared, because it was fans being fans. As a general rule, if you're a fan and you're being a fan, first off, remember, yes, you are committing copyright infringement. This term fair use, forget you have ever heard this in your life. Pretend there is no such thing. It will only get you in trouble. Again, if you actually are a professional who has a legal team, we can talk about fair use. Shy of that, just forget it even exists. It's going to get you in trouble. If you want to use something that's out there, if you want to use a piece of artwork, if you want to use someone's poem to put with your picture or something like that, y'all have seen the copyright symbol. Stay away from stuff that has that on it, but look for something instead that has 2 C's. That's Creative Commons. This is a license you can use if you go to creativecommons.org. The people who don't mind you using their stuff, who think that sharing is a good thing, who thinks that artists should be inspired by each other and build off of each other, use Creative Commons licenses. Oftentimes they'll say, you can use my stuff as long as you give me credit for it. If you love this picture that I've put out, great, use it on your website, just give me credit. Or it might say you can use it as long as you don't use it in a commercial way, or anything like that. Folks who publish under a Creative Commons license are much more likely to let you use their stuff, because that's why they chose the Creative Commons license. And if you're publishing things and you want people to be able to use it, because there's 2 ways to look at someone using, for instance, your picture on their website. I drew this lovely artist's rendition of a beach. There are clouds, there's sunlight, and there's dragons. Oh, cool. Okay, so nifty. Not from any particular book, just dragons in general. Not any particular, you know, gold, bronze, and green ones with dragon riders, but just general dragons in the sunset on the beach. Pretty, pretty. Half of you in here would like it. Okay. So one of you sitting on your website and says, wow, I really like that picture. I want to put that on my website. Just because it's on the internet doesn't mean you can just take it.
I see that one all the time.
Just because it's there doesn't mean you can take it. Just because it does not have this copyright symbol does not mean it's not protected. Remember, my speech, protected? Uh-huh, because they're recording it. Is there a copyright symbol anywhere? No, don't need one. You're protected without that symbol. It's smart to put that symbol on if you want to deter people from stealing it. but it's kind of like the lock on your car. It's kind of keeping honest people honest. It's not going to really keep thieves away. Now, there's two ways to look at the person who wants to use my pretty picture of dragons on a beach on their website. One way to look at it is, they're stealing my stuff. Another way to look at it is, they're promoting my stuff. Hey, if lots of people use my art on their websites, then people might start recognizing my brilliant style and my cute dragons. Maybe I'll make them look like kittens. Yeah. Someone will recognize that. And that's free publicity, if you look at it right. Put your name on it. Tell people you're welcome to use my cute, cool picture as long as you say I wrote it, as long as you make sure my signature is visible, as long as you have my website along the side so someone else can get it. Whatever like that you want to do. Look for a Creative Commons license. People like that are willing to share. If there's something out there you really want to use, and you want to use it in something that might be published, well, you know, again, my first thought is just make up your own stuff. But if you really want to do something that's derivative of someone else's work, there's an easy way to stay out of trouble. Ask. Get permission. Once the author tells you it's okay, then you can do it. If I didn't publish my dragon picture under a Creative Commons license, if I just had a little copyright symbol on it that says, nuh-uh, look, don't touch, okay, that's fine. So send me an email, say, hey, can I use this? And if I say yes, then guess what? Your use is permissive. You have to worry about these words that we don't know that we purged out of our brain. All you have to know is I'm not infringing because I'm doing this with permission. It's kind of the opposite of how we went through our high school years, where it's easier to be forgiven than to gain permission. Oftentimes with copyrighted works, it's easier to get permission because a lot of times they don't care. Yeah.
Would it be better to have that permission in writing,
though? Oh, hells yes.
Because sometimes, like, just asking someone.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Asking is nice, and they'll say yes. Your oral contract is worth exactly the paper it's written on. So, yeah, hell yeah. If you're using it and you need my permission, get that in writing. I've written a textbook for copyright classes, and I excerpted in you know, somewhat long a piece of Lawrence Lessig's work. He's the Creative Commons guy. So it's not usually taught in law schools. It's kind of counter-revolutionary. It's anarchist approach to copyright. In fact, we call it copy left, which is about the most clever thing lawyers have ever come up with. So I'm like, I need to excerpt from his books. I don't want to just talk about what he says. I think that it would really be much more meaningful for the students to read a chunk of how he puts it, because he's really very eloquent. And so I wanted to just use a huge chunk of free culture, and also I had a page limit I had to hit, and if he'd already written the page, it made it really easy to get to it by my deadline. So I wanted to use this big chunk of Lessig's work. And I thought, well, okay. In the past, when I've been teaching in classrooms, I've just used stuff freely, because one of the few times that you know, you actually can venture into that realm that we're not going to talk about so it only gets you in trouble is classroom use. I can use a lot of stuff in the classroom that I couldn't use elsewhere. I was writing a book. Well, my book's not going to make money. I filled out a W-9. They may one day send me enough to buy that can of Mountain Dew over there, but it's a textbook. I'm not going to get rich. I'm not famous to start with. It's not going to be a superstar bestseller, and let's be real, my market is limited to intellectual property classes in law schools. Professors have not already written their own book that they use. You know, I'm not going to get rich off this book. This book, I published. But I needed Lessig's permission, which I realized only after my editor asked me something else about to have permission. I was like, well, I need permission. This is educational. He's like, hello, we sell these. I'm like, I'm commercial. Oh, my God. This isn't class, but it's used in a classroom, but it's commercial use. Oh, my gosh. So I thought, well, this will be fun. I'm going to ask Lessig if I can steal a chapter out of his book and put it in my book. Now, Professor Lessig is big on sharing everything. Nothing should be protected because we all need to be producing, and all of the digital stuff is done by stealing other digital stuff. But he's big into all of that. And he thinks everyone should share. So I'm like, I kind of hope he says no. I'm going to have the best story if this Mr. Share Everything won't let me use this. He was very gracious. He emailed me back the same day. I mean, this guy is like famous and busy at real schools. And he emailed me back the same day and said I was welcome to use it, and he was happy that I was letting people read his stuff.
if you're not nice to him, he might threaten to put you on a panel.
That would be cool. He would tear tear me apart, but it'd be worth it. But yeah, he was very gracious, and damn it, he's not a hypocrite. So I have a big chunk of his work in my textbook. And you know what? If I hadn't gotten his permission, it'd be infringement. I got his permission. I'm not infringing a thing. That's the easy way to avoid infringement. And if they say no, then don't use it. Yes?
I've heard stories, specifically when I was researching comic books, that, specifically when I was researching comic book creators, that they would give permission to artists to use a character they had created, and then the company would actually sue the artist for giving permission. Do you know why that is?
Because you have to be sure that you're getting permission from the right person. I can give you permission to take that microphone home with you. In fact, feel free. That's a parting gift. Take that microphone home with you. Okay, what's going to happen when you start walking out the door with that microphone?
I kind of want to know now, actually.
I know three people between you and the door who are going to suggest that you put it back. Because you know what? That's not my microphone. And in fact, it's not even their microphone, I bet. They're probably running it from MMI like everyone else does. So you don't own that microphone just because I told you you could have it, because it ain't mine. So if I give you permission to use something that isn't mine, it's not worth any more than my permission to keep that microphone. And so if I am a comic book artist, and I have done the art and someone else did the story, it's a compilation, we're a joint work in it, maybe my publisher owns all the rights anyway. You know the fun thing? Lexus Corporation owns my book. I couldn't give you rights to use something out of my book because I don't own the copyright. Lexus does. So I could tell you, oh sure, steal my whole paragraph, no problem. And then Lexus would sue you if they ever noticed and or cared. But they have their own lawyers, they're a legal publishing company, they've got lots of lawyers, so they probably would sue you. They keep them, you know, caged up and just let them out when they need them. So this, you have to let them out now and again to hunt or they get really kind of mean. So Lexus probably would sue you. And they'd win because I'd even wrote out the permission. I put it in an agreement. I made it a contract. And they'd say, that's real cute. She hadn't owned it. You infringed our copyright. Same thing. If the publisher is the one who owned the comic book, then the artist's permission to use the character wasn't worth squat because the artist didn't own it. And a lot of times, artists don't know that. At the risk of offending a third of my audience, artists are sometimes really dumb when it comes to that stuff. I'm not an artist. I can draw a pony. I'll do that later for y'all. It's the one thing I can draw. I've been drawing it in the margins of all of my notebook papers since third grade. That was at least a few years ago. I'm now very good at it. It's the only thing I can draw. I have no artistic talent. But I can write a really good contract. People who are really artistic tend to not to like to really worry about what was in the contract. Oh, we all just agreed. We all just agreed makes lots of money for lawyers down the road. Put it down, write it down, get it written out in detail. If you're collaborating with someone, if one of you's doing the art and one of you's doing the story, I actually went through a very long dispute with a client who was the artist. And, okay, you worked together and you were great friends. How does that end in the real world? We don't speak anymore. And one of us has gone on and become a successful artist. In fact, I think he's downstairs in artist, or wherever they put artist alley now. He's usually here, but I won't see him this year. But so he's probably down there in artist alley, and his buddy, who claims he has all of the talent, for some reason is not really publishing much these days, and wants to go back to that work they did together and expand on it. He's even had some interest from some studios to make it into a series. Well, what can he do with or without his old, not so much a friend anymore, his permission? Well, there's law that would tell you what the rules between joint authors might be. There's laws tell you if you're joint authors, but there's an agreement that you signed somewhere, and that agreement's going to decide who owns what. So even if you don't really think it'll matter, read the agreement before you sign away anything. Before you enter into a collaboration with someone to create something really cool, just write down, even if it's just in English, that's better than nothing, what y'all are going to do later with it. Who has the rights to do what? Can you expand on it without the other person, or if you're not working together, does the work die? Figure it out, write it down, so that you're not having to call people like me later. And because again, you don't want the judge to tell you, because by the time the judge tells you, the people who've made money on your work are the lawyers. I thought he was telling me I had to shut up. He's like, no, I'm going to take your photograph. Yeah. Okay, so look natural while you talk. Yeah.
I have a question about the term of the copyright, disregarding any reversion clauses that you put into a contract. Is that life of the author plus 70 years? If you sign over all of your copyright to a publisher, does the publisher get the life of the author plus 70 years, or is there a different term when the publisher owns your work?
You have, when as long as you created it, the term is life plus 70. You can give that to a publisher. You have a chance to get it back 35 years later. There are some hoops you have to jump through.
So even if you
file
don't...
a notice to get your rights back from that publisher, and it's lots of legal details that you have to exactly right or it won't work. You have one chance to get it back.
So even if you don't have a reversion clause in your contract, you can still get it back.
A reversion clause usually is more if your book goes out of publish. If your book's not being published, can I get it back, please? If you're no longer using it, may I please have it? Because I still really like it because I wrote it. So even if you're no longer publishing it, can I at least self-publish it? Can I do something with this work that I really care about that didn't make you enough money and you're not selling it anymore? That's usually where that's used, not so much for I'm tired of you, can I have it back? But you do have a right to get it back from a license once. Yeah.
With a logo or a company name, is it best to have
trademarks.
That trademark versus copyright?
Yes.
Okay. And is there a site that's best to do that on?
USPTO.gov.
Okay.
That's the only one to use, by the way. It's not best, it is the one. USPTO.gov, it's US Patent Trademark Office.
Okay.
And you file your trademarks there.
Great. Thank you.
As somebody in the music industry, it's my understanding that
the underlying composition is one copyright, and then the sound recording is a separate copyright.
Correct.
And of course, anybody can make a sound recording of the underlying composition. Mm-hmm. And then there's publishing on top of that,
mm-hmm.
which is a separate set of rights.
Mm-hmm. The music industry is really complex when it gets to copyright. That's the summary. So far, what
but,
you said.
But I was wondering if that applied, let's say, to the recording of you. You discussed the copyright of this lecture. What you're saying is that one copyright and then this audiovisual recording of it a separate copyright?
In this instance, I think. I haven't thought this through before, but I believe at this point this is just the fixation of my lecture. So all there is really is that sound recording of the lecture. So that is the copyrighted work because this is ephemeral. This what I'm doing here isn't protected. That recording is the fixation of it. So that is the work.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you.
Transcript of the recording would be a separate
right.
It would be the equivalent of the underlying score.
Right.
Then if you want to publish it later.
Yeah, that's all different. As soon as the offers start pouring in for my lecture, Scott and I will come to a good agreement on how to do it. So far, the money's not there. I have to go back to work again. Yeah.
If you have several ideas ready to go across different mediums, so you're ready to put copyrights or trademarks on different things, is it better to do it as yourself as an individual or make a business first and then put them through your business? Do you have extra protection or rights?
It depends on a whole lot of different things, your circumstances, what you're planning to use them are, what they are, and oh, by the way, you have a whole bunch of ideas, you can't protect those.
Already created works.
Okay, already created works. Then really there's not an easy answer to that. It depends, and it would really depend on your individual facts. And if you want, I can talk to you a little bit after, but that one's going to be more detailed than the rest of the world wants to hear. Before we get deeper into the realm of questions, let me make sure I didn't forget one of the main things I wanted to talk. Who owns it? Oh, who owns the rights? We're sort of touched on that, but I do want to make sure that we talk about this a little more. We talked about Lexis owns my book. There's a new trial, or it's not a trial yet, it's just a, so far it's arguing on the web and sending ugly letters to each other. It may eventually get to be a trial. Some of y'all know the new cosplay show on Sci-Fi. They're in some trouble right now because some of the pictures they've been using, they got releases from the cosplayers to use the photos. This is what we're talking about up here. If I take a picture of you in your costume, you don't own that. I do. The work is the photo and I own it. And so if you give someone the right to use that photo that I gave you a copy of, you don't have any rights to give someone else the right to use it. I own them. So there are a handful of photographers who are really angry at Sci-Fi because they either they have too many lawyers to have done it without thinking about it. Either someone stupid got away with not checking with a lawyer, or they just willingly said, ha ha, we don't care, we think you guys are too small to sue us. I think someone somewhere did something without checking with legal, and this is what happens when you do stuff without checking with legal. There's going to be a huge lawsuit that's going to cause this show a bunch of problems because they got permission from the wrong person. So who owns your copyright? Usually the person who creates the work owns it. There are exceptions. If you create something at your job, chances are your employer owns it. If someone pays you, we're going to get to questions in a second. If someone pays you to create something, then it's a little more complicated. You don't work for them. You're not an employer. You've just been hired to do a work. Well, if you've been hired, for instance, to do the web design, make sure somewhere in that contract you kind of say who owns what, and if you want to own something, make sure you have it said that, first off, it's a work made for hire, even if it isn't, always put that in there, as if it were yours, and if it's not, then you transfer all of your rights to me, so I own it. If you don't have everybody transfer all the rights, then chances are you don't own what you thought you owned. If you paid someone to do your website, they may own your web design. They shouldn't if you signed a good contract, but they might. You'll also want to make sure that everything they used when they did your web design, they owned. It gets murky out there real fast. You got to think about ownership. Just because a web designer put it on your web page doesn't mean he had the right to use it. Check. Because when the copyright claims start coming, because it's on your website saying, oh, but he gave it to me, just means both of y'all are defendants. It doesn't get you off the hook. So make sure you know who owns it. And if you think you own it, be sure. If it's something like what you do at work, even if you did it at home, your boss may own it. And again, there's a multi-step analysis we go through, which is beyond what everyone else wants to sit through. If it's an issue, it's worth finding out for sure. If you do something at work that is similar to what you want to do on your own, it's going to be hard for you to own that. If you are a bricklayer and you want to write poetry, there is very little chance that your employer is going to own your poetry. If you work for Reuters and you write press releases and you want to write a journalistic publication of some sort, it's going to be very hard not to have your employers own that. It's possible, but you're going to have to be careful about how you do things. So keep in mind, your boss may own it. And if you're doing stuff sort of at work and sort of at home and you hope you own this later, one of the ways to help it be more likely that you'll own it is just do it at home. Don't do it on your lunch break. Don't use the same computer. I know everything's Google documented now, so it's all out in the cloud. But do it at home. Don't use your employer's pencils even. That'll help. But make sure if you're licensing stuff from someone, you know that they own it. Make sure if you're licensing stuff to someone or if you're planning to sell or use something, make sure you own it. It really sucks when you discover your boss actually owned that. That comes up more in the patent field. Oftentimes it's the scientist said, oh, well, I invented this vaccine to cure cancer, and I didn't do it while I was working at the DuPont labs 30 hours a day, every day. I did it on my free time at home. What was I working on DuPont? Cure for cancer. You know, he's not going to own that. And DuPont will have signed a nice big long contract with him pretty much saying, everything you ever think we own. But they'll pay him a lot, so it's okay. And most companies now have figured out that they get a lot fewer, I haven't invented anything yet. I quit. 6 months later, hey, look what I discovered in the past 6 months. A lot fewer of those problems if they actually let the scientists in on it. Most scientists get a cut of what they invent these days in most academic and research labs. Some of you know that way better than I do. I don't live in either of those environments. But make sure you own it. Make sure you know who owns it, because it might not be who you think. And a lot of copyright claims and a lot of difficulties come purely out of that. And I think that was the last of the things I wanted to make sure I covered. Yes, your fanfic is infringement. It's in my notes. Okay, now, the rest of the questions. Where did we leave off?
Hi.
You is
Hi.
Where we left off.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question because I plan on independently publishing comics.
Okay. Do you
is
own
it?
Them?
Huh?
Do you own them?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
are you
is
sure?
It better? Yes. Yes, I promise. Is it better to, when you're filing, do you file for each character, for your story, for your art, or is it all inclusive when you file for
You can't
for
really
one?
File separately for a character. You would file
okay.
the comic book.
Okay.
And if you, it would make the most sense if you have several works to just get copyrights on each of those works.
Right.
You don't have to do each frame. You don't have to do each individual
okay.
one. There is sometimes some strategy to making different filings for down the road litigation purposes, and okay. I really don't know the best way to do that. So I'm not the one to answer that question. But, I mean, hell, if you want to, you can staple it all together and file it once.
Right.
But make sure you file it is the detail that I'm going to leave you with.
Okay.
Does that sort of answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Thank you.
I know better than to say who's next. I'm letting the man with the mic control this. Okay.
I know we're running real short on time, but I was hoping you could advise us on something you'd mentioned earlier. When we do copyright a work, we do have a work we've put out there. It's by the Copyright Office. What do we do when someone does use it? I mean, what's the best course of action for...
Yeah, see, there's the big question. Mm-hmm. So you've done everything right, you own the work, and then someone steals it. Well, the first thing you do is you send them a letter. If you can afford a lawyer to write it, that's better. We call it a takedown notice. By the way, any of you guys who are doing the fan fiction stuff or anything that's vaguely derivative, when you get the takedown notice that's written on expensive paper, take it down. quit using this. Just say, yes, ma'am, and take it down. That's really your best result, unless you have lots of lawyers. If you're the content owner and someone's stolen your stuff and you don't have lots of lawyers, the first thing you want to do is contact them and say, hey, you're using my stuff. I would generally suggest the first thing to do is, if you can, get a lawyer to write that takedown notice, because it makes you just be taken a little more seriously. And then you can talk nicely to them. If I said, okay, the lawyers say you got to take it down, and then call them and say, hey, you've gotten this notice, or have the lawyer call if you can afford that. You've gotten this notice. You should be taking this down so that we don't have to sue you, even if that's a huge bluff. The bottom line, I don't have a better answer than courts are expensive. Sometimes it really is a game of chicken. Who's willing to go the furthest before they fold? I've seen a couple of cases recently, and I've had a couple people call for some advice on a couple of situations recently, where we're dealing with really the equivalent of patent trolls and copyright. We've got copyright trolls now, who will say, no, I own that clip art. I got it from this package of stuff I paid for. I'm a professional designer. I bought these things and got my license. Yes, but I really own it. So do you want me to sue you, or do you want to give me $500? It's extortion, and sometimes it works. So it's, you know, at that point, it kind of becomes a game of chicken. And some people don't care, and they're betting you won't sue them. And some people say, oh, I don't want to be sued, and they'll take it down. Sometimes you can go to, and sometimes, depending on who it is, rather than even getting the takedown notice, it might be what you want to do is call them first and say, hey, you know, I own that. And I don't let people use it for free. I'd be happy to license to you for a reasonable fee. But that's mine. You need to either write me a check or take it down. And if that doesn't work, then maybe go for the lawyer letter. Sometimes starting with a lawyer letter makes it be taken more seriously. That's kind of a strategy thing. It's going to depend on who you're dealing with. Who's next?
I have a few questions.
I have no idea where you are, but I can hear you. There you are. You don't have to stand. That's fine. I just like...
Couple questions. Let's say you get permission from the author to use a piece of their work in either a published medium or maybe on the site. Can they later then revoke that permission and force you to take it down?
It depends on what the extent of their permission was. Okay. To the extent Lessig told me I could use his work in my book, I think he would be precluded from saying, oh, you have to, you know, get all those copies of the book back because I'm not letting you use it anymore. Can I use it again without his permission? Probably not. And if I were doing a future edition, would I have to renew my permission? Maybe. But it depends on the scope of the permission that they gave you. So if you are getting permission, the smart thing to do is make sure the scope of the permission covers the scope of your intended use, and that they can't later say, psych, no, and leave you kind of screwed.
Okay. Second question is, in software, let's say you develop a finished piece of software for a client. Mm-hmm. A finished program for a client, and they own the finished software. But then you have specific subroutines like how to handle video in your program. Can that be used for other projects, since it's technically not the whole thing, but
it depends. If you used anything from a GNU license, then it's a whole different story too. That's a different that's his panel. It's going to depend, honestly, on where you got that subroutine from. If you created it for that work, then no, they own it. If it's one that wasn't protected in the first place and it's one that's common knowledge out there, then yes, you can still use it. That really is not one I can give you a good answer to right here, because that one's going to be it depends. There's a lot of legal stuff in that business realm.
And then final question, the Author Plus 70, if you have multiple authors. How does that work?
It's the, on joint authors, it's the life of the last living plus 70.
Okay.
I have to go with what he says. Get in eye contact with me isn't going to help. He's the one controlling the mic. The man with the mic has the power. Yes?
I have a company. I have a website.
Okay.
I've got
you own it?
I own it, yes. But the question is, should I file for an official copyright for the pictures and the official content on it, or is it just I'm publishing it and that's
Do you really
sufficient?
Care that much about them?
I have some unique items that I have up on there that I've created that...
Is it the items or the photographs that you care about?
Both.
Yeah, file them. It's not expensive.
Okay.
If it's something you care about, file it. If it's something that you don't really, then don't. I mean, it's easy. It's $35. If it's something you care $35 about, then file it. If it's something you really don't care, all you care about is, you know, the picture of this scooter on the medical rental company's picture site was really not worth squat. They wouldn't care if I stole that, I hope, because I sent it to a friend of mine, which would technically be infringement. I didn't get permission. The scooter itself is what they're really selling. They don't care if you steal the picture of their scooter off the website. I'm sure they didn't bother to copyright it. The manufacturer may have. Who knows? I may have committed copyright infringement. I took a picture of this to send a picture on my phone to my friend who said, well, you're in a wheelchair or what? I said, no, or what? This is way cooler than a wheelchair. And sent a picture of it. Well, I took a picture of it, which is fine. Had I taken the picture from the website, I might have been in trouble, depending on whether they cared. They'd never know, so I wasn't in trouble.
Should it be filed for each picture I have that I want protected in?
Anything you care about, file. You can file them together.
All into one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you mention copyright.gov?
Yes. Copyright.gov is where you do that. USPTO.gov is where you do trademarks. I'll say it again.
Okay. My question specifically for copyrights then was, if you have an instance where you believe someone may be infringing and you want to send them for like a notice of, you know, that you believe that they're infringing on your work, do you potentially waive yourself or open yourself up to waiving your right of venue by sending it to another state? I do IP law, but I do patents. So like for us, if I send a letter to somebody else or any of my clients, we always follow suit first in a court of our choice and then send it. We just don't serve them. If we don't do that, I've had a client who did it once on their own, and then they got sued in this small district in southern Texas, and they're in Maryland, and that was a pretty much
you
of a
might
nightmare.
Well be. Venue choice is something that I have not honestly looked at since I passed my civil procedure exam.
Okay.
So I couldn't tell you, but that does sound reasonable.
Okay.
Sounds likely.
Thank you.
You make sufficient contacts with the... I'm pulling International Shoe and Pennoyer out of my brain here from CP, so I wouldn't want to answer that. I can make up an answer if you like, but it'll be complete.
What can you tell us about the process of filing the copyright? Is that something that someone could do by themselves?
Yes,
or
it's very simple.
Oh, okay.
You basically put your name. Mm-hmm. In the next block, you fill out what kind of work it is and your contact information, and that's really about it. You need to send them copies of it, but it tells you how to do that. It steps you through it. Now, Scott did make sure I'd mentioned copyright.gov. Don't go somewhere else. Don't go through some third-party site that'll file your copyright for you. All they're going to do is probably introduce errors into it because they're being stupid. They're a stupid business model anyway. And they're still going to charge you the filing fee that Congress files you or that Library of Congress charges. They're also going to charge you their own chance to introduce errors filing fee. So don't make sure that you go directly to the government sites, copyright.gov. And that is where you will file your copyright. Make sure for trademarks you go to USPTO.gov. Otherwise, they may say, oh, you're filing your trademark, ha, ha, ha. If you think you're on the right site and somewhere it asks you to sign a release allowing someone to do something on your behalf, you are on the wrong site. Stop, delete, go back. Find the right site. The government does not ask you to allow them to represent you.
Hi, I complete a manuscript, I file, I then sign with a publisher and retain my copyright. We work together on revisions. Do I need to file again on the revised manuscript?
Eventually, you'll want to file the finished one. Don't do every round. I mean, if this is a real honest-to-God published book, file the finished one, whatever you're selling. But you don't need to feel obligated to do, if you're working on a short story and you're one of those people who works on short stories with great pain and anguish and blood and tears, and it takes you a number of years and a whole lot of revisions, for, no, don't do every revision. There's really no need. Just whatever it is you're going to be distributing, file that.
So I've got a body of sculpture that I've got all my pictures taken, ready to file as soon as I get home. If, as I continue to make works, should I do them individually or give it a year and file them all at once?
Again, your real value there is in different lawsuit flaming details. If it's 3,000 of them, you're going to go broke trying to file each one individual. Do some of them together.
I can't do more than maybe 20 in a year.
Yeah, so if you want to do this individually, that would be fine. Sometimes that's simpler. If we're talking about big independent works, it's just neater to do an independent claim. Still be valid if you did them all together, but if you're doing big stuff and you might like sell one of them and not another, and it's just neater if you have an individual filing on each one. It doesn't matter, your rights are the same, but how you can claim it later might be tweaked in there somewhere. So,
and all that still applies even if I have the master mold and continue to make it, right?
If you are selling copies of
yes.
your work, which is what those the oh. products of that mold be, your copyright really is going to be in the mold.
Thank you. I've got poems that I've written, so if I copyright those and then I decide later, instead of having these all clumped together and given out as books or sold or whatever, I want to actually put them on, say, on YouTube, or I want to do something mm-hmm. digital with them. Does the original copyright apply, or do I have to get a separate one for whatever digital format?
At that point, you're probably creating a digital work. You're creating a derivative work. You're creating a performance, a recorded performance of it, and so you'd want to file that too, if you care. Again, if you think someone's going to infringe that YouTube work, the right and the underlying work will still be there. But if you care about the extra works you're doing, then file it.
You said you cannot copyright an idea.
And that was right.
However, what if you're the very first to express this idea?
Then you own the expression and not the idea. The absolute fundamental case where all this came out of was an old English case. The man who invented dual column accounting was either, I forgot their names. The man who invented it was not the one who wrote a successful book about it. The man who wrote a successful book looked at the cool new accounting process and said, huh, I can steal that, and did. Even stole the copies of the forms in the book. And it was not infringement because all he took was the idea, which is a novel idea. No one had come up with it before. Novelty would be patenting. Back then, they didn't have business method patent, so it couldn't be patented. Now they could because, you know, he used numbers in an order, and that would be patentable. But it could be patented now. Too late, everyone uses it. But then he tried to copyright it. Copyright did not protect the method of accounting that he used. And instead, the guy who ripped him off, blatantly ripped him off, and copied the forms. It wasn't copyright violation, because even though he was clearly stealing the idea was not protected, and the forms were deemed to be necessary for using the idea, and therefore part of the idea, not the expression.
So you cannot get copyright protection for an idea. Mm-hmm. However, could you get patent protection for a brand new unexpressed idea?
You would have to have it expressed in something much more tangible than just your brain. There would have to be something that you could patent other than, I mean, what are we talking about before I go too far into a hole?
It's an idea expressing why sex is pleasurable.
I think that's probably covered by an awful lot of biochemistry that would be natural process that's not patentable. You can't patent a natural phenomenon. You can't I kept falling back and forth. I would say you can patent your discovery. Your pen's right there. But you can't patent a discovery. A discovery is something you discovered in nature. If I discovered a new bird, I can't patent that bird. Now, don't talk about discovering genes and stuff like that. That's a whole different issue, and the patent office seems to be smoking a lot of crack these days. Things I learned about what you can patent and can't patent, they're patenting. But I can't, if I discover a new bird, I can't patent it. I can't copyright it. I can write about it. If I'm a clever scientist, I can probably name it, but I can't really protect it because it's out there. I didn't make it. So I don't think you invented sex. And so, now, if you had a new sexual technique and you were describing that, your description of it would be protected under copyright. The technique itself could be used freely by anyone else who was sufficiently flexible. If you tried to patent it, then the patent office would have to decide if it was already being done by someone else, and that patent clerk would love researching your patent. Okay.
Okay, two more quick questions.
Okay, you've got the mic.
I'm going to try to make this as quick as possible. I signed a contract with Company A for... yes, but I was young and stupid. And this covered about nine different films. I, at that time, didn't understand the difference between synchronization rights for one film And synchronization rights is a blanket right to the work that was created. Now, I have since then been able to offer to buy back the synchronization rights to everything else for a dollar because they agreed that was a misprint.
Okay.
Then the films came out, and at the very end of the film it says original music, copyright, Company B. Now this is in Company A that I signed the contract with. I haven't signed a contract with the company that's claiming the copyright to
the
work.
Did you sign the contract with, license it to the second company?
I don't know that they've licensed it, but I don't know that they own the copyright either. And
that's going to depend in large part on who signed what with whom and what the fine print of each one says. There's not going to be a blanket answer
because
from the law. It's going to be what
that's
you guys agreed amongst yourselves.
Okay.
So you would have to read that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sometimes the law doesn't have an answer, but the lawyers do.
Okay.
What
as far as with logos or name of a company, if you have not had it copyrighted and you're
trademarked.
Doing the trademarked, you're researching it, you find out someone else maybe has taken this now.
Then
you had this company going for several years. What are your rights there?
You should have filed sooner. if someone else has filed the name that you are using, you will have the right, most likely under common law, to continue to use it in the geographic location that you are currently using it, probably. You won't be able to expand at all, and you should have filed it federally when you started using it. It also will depend on what they're doing. If they're doing the same kind of business, then yeah, you're kind of screwed if they've already filed federal trademark on it. If it's a really lame name and lots of other people use it also, then you might all be able to use it. If it is something that they're using in a completely different line of work, if you are selling bottled water and they're selling toys to help with this gentleman's sexual technique, then it's very possible that you would both be able to use that name and it wouldn't be considered to have a likelihood of confusion. So again, my answer is going to be it depends, but the short answer for the rest of the class is you should have filed sooner. And that was my last question, so I will stop looking like I'm an athlete.